Welcome to the Red Zone.
The Red Zone. Red Zone.
With Soren Petro. An exclusive presentation of KCChiefs.com. For the next 60 minutes, this is your in-depth, inside look at the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, here's your host, Soren Petro.
And good afternoon and welcome. You're in the Red Zone here at KCChiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday as the football playoffs continue. We continue to evaluate the Kansas City Chiefs. Coming up a little bit later on, we'll evaluate the Chiefs' numbers in comparison to the statistics of the Final Four, the four teams that are left playing in these NFL playoffs, and break down where perhaps the Chiefs need to get better, where they're good enough as we look ahead to the offseason that will be for the Kansas City Chiefs, both in the draft, free agency. We'll also talk some football with one of the fine writers covering the NFL today. From Sports Illustrated, senior writer Jim Trotter will join us. We'll get his thoughts on the Kansas City Chiefs, the 10 version. Look ahead to 2011, see where he thinks the Chiefs need to improve to be one of the teams that's standing this weekend, the conference championship weekend of the NFL. We'll also talk about take a couple of your emails. As a matter of fact, as a couple of emails, you can always email us, redzone@kcchiefs.org. That is redzone@kcchiefs.org. We always enjoy your emails. Nice to know our good buddy Daryl in the Great White North up in Canada back on the email trail. We'll hit a couple of the emails. Thanks to everybody for joining us this week in the Red Zone, wherever you are, be it Canada, where our man Daryl is, or overseas. Always have a number of emails from our armed forces. And for all the guys listening, all the Chiefs fans looking for a little taste of home while they are over defending this nation, we say thank you very much for joining us here in the Red Zone. Let's start with some of the awards that are coming down. Pro Football Weekly and the Pro Football Writers Association of America, they're the ones who voted on these awards. They're printed up in Pro Football Weekly, one of the longest standing and most respected publications when it comes to covering the NFL, has released their all NFL team as well as their awards, various different awards from MVP to Rookie of the Year. They also have a first team all rookie squad. The Chiefs, three folks at One Arrowhead Drive being named on the list of Pro Football Writers Awards. We'll start with that today. Jamal Charles, first-team running back. He joins Arian Foster on that list as a first-team member for the Pro Football Weekly Awards. Jamal Charles having just a fantastic season for the Kansas City Chiefs. Every year has been better than the last when it comes to Charles. Charles this time, 230 carries for 1,467 yards, 5 touchdowns on the ground. He also caught 45 passes for 468 yards and 3 more touchdowns. So 8 touchdowns on the year for Jamal Charles from scrimmage. A very impressive total for him, over 1,900 yards from scrimmage. Of course, the 6.4 yards per attempt when you round up, it ended up being 6.3 and change, falling just so short, just inches almost, when you consider a full NFL season, inches away from setting a new record for yards per carry in a season. Jamal Charles, really, I've called this before, and I've talked to a number of the East Coast media about him, the best-kept secret in the National Football League. I think he's starting to get some pub. He is a Pro Bowler. He is first team on this list. He'll be first team on many other lists. But when you talk about a guy that for his career is averaging 6 yards a carry, you talk about career yards per carry. Now, he's got a long way to go. We hope a long career still ahead of him to establish this mark. But he is half a yard per game, half a yard per carry better than anybody in the history of the NFL. Bo Jackson, I believe, tops that list. And he is at about 5.4 yards per carry. Jamal Charles all the way up at 6 yards per carry. But I think amazing to look at how Jamal Charles has grown as a football player. His first year, 357 yards rushing. Last year, 1,120. This year, 1,467. Just getting better and better and better receiving. And I think this is probably the best-kept secret on Jamal Charles, who, again, is the best-kept secret going in the NFL. It's 27 for 272 his first year. A lot of people at that point thought, hey, that's what this guy's role is going to be, is as a third down back. He'll be the guy that they bring in and third and long and try to run some draw plays on the ground and throw him the ball. That'll be really His role on this football team, and at 10.1 yards per catch, you can understand why. Last year, 13 more catches, up to 40 for 297 yards. The yards per catch drops to 7.4. This year, as I mentioned, 45 for 468. That's 10.4 yards per catch plus three touchdowns in the receiving game. Two in one game. Jamaal Charles just becoming a complete all-around back, a guy who's not willing, not afraid, and certainly willing to stick his nose in and pick up the blitz as well. Congratulations to Jamaal Charles as he makes the first team. Again, that's not first team AFC. That's first team for the whole NFL, one of two backs, he and Arian Foster, on that list. All-rookie team, first-team safety, Eric Berry making the list. You can make a case for Tony Moyaki being first-team tight end. He loses out to Rob Gronkowski, certainly a worthy recipient of that award of the New England Patriots, Rob Gronkowski. Tony Moyaki does not make it, but Eric Berry does. First-team safety, Eric Berry having a very impressive year. Off the coach's tape, the Kansas City Chiefs, their official in-house statistics, they list him with 126 tackles, both for both solo and assisted tackles. Other publications you'll see have him at 92 tackles. They use the coach's tape to grade him and break it down. They have Eric Berry for 126 tackles. In addition to that, he had two sacks, also picking up four interceptions. Eric Berry, just a phenomenal season, forced a fumble as well, returned one of those four interceptions for a touchdown. The Chiefs wanted to draft a playmaker in that D backfield. A lot of people equated him to Eric Berry as far as what they thought he would be when he was coming out of Tennessee. The early returns are he's on his way to being an impact player. I don't want to say anybody's going to be Ed Reed type. I think I may have misspoken and said be an Eric Berry type. Be an Ed Reed type safety was the expectations, the hopes for him coming out of Tennessee. And I certainly don't want to say anybody's going to get there, but he had one heck of a rookie season. Struggled a little bit early in the pass defense and the pass coverage for the Chiefs. Always very good against the run. As we mentioned, a couple of sacks came with the pass rush. In addition to in coverage, picking up four interceptions, really got better and better as time went along in that pass coverage. One interception for a 54-yard touchdown return. Just a big, big play for the Kansas City Chiefs against the Tennessee Titans. Eric Berry looking like he is certainly going to be one of the pillars the Chiefs defense is built around for years to come. Nice to see an impact football player with the age 22 next to their name. Congratulations to Eric Berry as he is a first-team all-rookie for the Pro Football Weekly Awards. And one other award handed out, Scott Pioli, Executive of the Year. He picks up that award and I think richly deserving of that award. Took over a team 2 years ago that was 2-14. I think it's difficult to give general managers or coaches one-year awards. I've said many times I'll give the Coach of the Year award and I'll really give the GM of the Year award personally to whatever team wins the Super Bowl. I'll give it to their personnel folks. But from a standpoint of a team making a quantum leap in 1 year, Scott Pioli certainly deserves that. 2 years ago, this franchise, 2-14. They move up to 4-12 last year. But when you look at what a general manager is in charge of, an executive is in charge of, he's in charge of the entire football operation. What an offseason for the Kansas City Chiefs. It began long before any player personnel move was made for this team. It started out by acquiring both Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel as the coordinators for this team. Certainly two guys that made a giant impact on the team. From there, personnel decisions and free agency, subtle moves, not moves that broke the bank account or certainly led SportsCenter with their decisions, but Sean Smith coming in, starting much of the year at defensive end, also rolling down and playing nose tackle, getting Casey Wiegman, getting Ryan Lilja to supplement and solidify the offensive line. Moves that don't just blow your doors off in free agency, but ended up being outstanding moves. Three starting football players acquired in free agency, all with respectable contracts that long-term, however long they're members of the Chiefs, will not blow up the salary cap for the Chiefs. Just a great offseason in free agency for the Kansas City Chiefs. Then you roll into the draft, and a draft that looks like it's going to pay dividends for years. We mentioned Eric Berry being on the all-rookie team. Second-rounders. And Dexter McCluster, a guy who took a lot of snaps for the Kansas City Chiefs. Also figures into the return game, return to punt for a touchdown. Javier Arenas, the Chiefs nickelback and punt returner, kick returner as well for the Kansas City Chiefs. Go into the third round. John Asamoah asked to start only two games, but the Chiefs rushing attack, I know one of those games plowing for 200-plus yards on the ground, doing a fine job when he stepped in, and looks like he's got a real future in the NFL at one of the guard positions. And then Tony Moiaki, a guy that, like we said, arguably could have been first team, sets records for receptions in a season by a rookie tight end for the Chiefs. When you're topping Tony Gonzalez rookie numbers, I think it says it all about what you've accomplished as a tight end. Just a great pick there. And then in the fifth round, getting a starting safety in Kendrick Lewis. And Cam Sheffield certainly had the neck injury early in the year and was on IR, but a guy who showed promise on special teams and maybe eventually as an outside linebacker as well. Kendrick Lewis, starter. Tony Moiaki, starter. John Asamoah started a couple of games. Dexter McCluster started a couple of games. And then, of course, Eric Berry, starter and all-rookie. That's a heck of a draft class, along with a very shrewd free agent class for the Chiefs, plus great personnel decisions made on the coaching staff. Richly deserving of the award, Scott Pioli, Executive of the Year, according to Pro Football Weekly. All right, we'll take a break. We come back. We're going to break down some of the numbers. Take a look at how the Chiefs compare to the final four, the four teams that are still standing. That's coming up next here in the Red Zone.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Every Sunday, a city of more than 2 million unites. A community of fans thousands strong anticipates. A team of 53 players charges the field.
It's a sweep left to the fullback, and a great block springs him to the outside. He's up the left sideline.
And one grocery store is proud to support them all.
20. He's going to outrace everyone to the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. A Kansas City Chiefs fan, they'll tailgate just about anywhere. And they live to hear the three most important words ever.
Tailgate Kansas City!
With Hy-Vee's weekly tailgate specials, you'll find everything you need for your next Chiefs tailgate or Chiefs party. Stop into Hy-Vee and stock up with new tailgate specials every week.
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Hi, we're Giacomo and Angelo, and we make Palermo's Pizza.
We actually grew up in a pizzeria where we learned to toss pizza dough by hand.
So you can believe our new hand-tossed-style frozen pizzas offer taste your family will love, guaranteed.
Yep, our pizza's 200% authentic, like us.
200%?
Yeah, 100% times two of us.
Well, obviously, Papa didn't teach you math. Anyway, look for our new hand-tossed-style pizzas and try one.
Palermo's, it's pizzeria perfect.
And the official frozen pizza of the Chiefs.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on KCChiefs.com.
All right, welcome back. Soren Petro with you here in the Red Zone. We'll talk with our man Jim Trotter from Sports Illustrated, senior NFL writer for Sports Illustrated, coming up in our next segment. Thought we'd break down some of the numbers, give you some footing to work with when we talk to Jim. How the Chiefs stack up, statistically speaking, with the four teams that remain standing, Steelers and Jets in the AFC, Bears and Packers in the NFC. Let's start with the offensive side of the equation. The average of the four teams that are still standing is the 14th best scoring offense and 16th best yardage offense. The Chiefs, actually number 14, they are 14th best in scoring and 12th best in yardage. The Chiefs, 366 points is exactly what the average was of the four teams that are still standing. Yardage-wise, the Chiefs outgained the average. Just short of 6,000 yards for the Chiefs, just short of 5,400 yards. Excuse me, just short of 5,600 yards for the Chiefs, just short of 5,400 yards. So the Chiefs outgaining the average by about 220. If you're interested in the rank, again, the Chiefs 14th in scoring. Steelers, the Packers, the highest scoring team. They were ranked 10th in the league. Steelers 12th, Jets 13th, and Bears 21st. So the Chiefs, as far as their scoring rank, come in would be just behind the Packers, the Steelers, and the Jets, and well out in front of the Chicago Bears. Yardage-wise, the Chiefs would rank right in the middle of the playoff teams. Packers were 9th in yards, Jets 11th. I mentioned the Chiefs were 12th. The Steelers were 14th in yardage, and the Bears 30th. overall in yardage. How did they break down compared to the pass and the run with these teams? Chiefs were the 30th best passing offense in the NFL. The average of these teams, only 17th. You might expect it to be higher. Now, the Packers were significantly higher. Fifth best passing offense, Steelers 14th. Might shock some people that the Steelers were the next highest team left. Jets 22nd best passing team, and the Chicago Bears 28th for an overall average of 17th. If there's a place that the Chiefs need to continue to improve, it is that passing attack. Again, average of these offenses, passing attack, 17th. Chiefs, 30th overall. Rushing attack. We know the Chiefs were number one in the NFL in rushing. The average of the four teams left, 15th best in the NFL in rushing. The Chiefs rushed for over 2,600 yards this year. These teams averaged 1,800. In fact, only one of the teams topping the 2,000-yard mark. Jets were the fourth best rushing team in the NFL. Steelers, 11th best. Chicago Bears, 22nd. And the Green Bay Packers all the way down at number 24. I don't think you ever aspire to get worse in a category, but it does appear that the passing attack has got to improve for the Chiefs. Rushing attack is fine. We'll talk with Jim about this. I'm interested to get his thoughts because can you focus too much on the run? Can you spend too much time trying to get the running game going? Do you become too conservative? And we'll talk to him about turnovers as well. The Chiefs with only 14 turnovers, the average of these four teams turning the ball over 23 times, 18 for the Steelers, 21 for the Jets, 22 for the Packers, and 31 for the Bears. Can you become too focused? 14 is one of the, in fact, it's tied for the fourth best year ever and fewest number of turnovers by a team. Can you become too focused on not turning the ball over? When you focus so heavily on running the ball, when you focus so heavily on not turning it over, do you make yourself, by very nature, too conservative? Does it handcuff you in your ability to get the big plays that I think are necessary to win playoff games? If you look at the playoff wins, a lot of big plays have been a big part of the equation for the teams in this playoffs. I certainly wouldn't advocate turning the ball over more. The point isn't, hey, do you want to turn the ball over more? The point is, do you need to be more aggressive? Do you need to risk a few more turnovers? Nobody wants to turn it over 50 or 60 times, but should you risk a few more turnovers in an effort to get more big plays, more game-changing plays, something we'll talk about with Jim Trotter coming up. I personally feel that this was a very well-coached team, and they looked at the talent, the personnel, which is still on the rise, still in the growing stages, and said the best way for us to win games, our best bet is to limit our turnovers and maximize our great running attack. If we can do that, that gives us the best chance to win. I don't know that that gives you the best chance to win in the postseason, but it certainly gave the Chiefs the best chance to win in the regular season. It translated into a 10-6 record and an AFC West champion. Again, we'll talk to Jim Trotter about that a lot more. Offensively, it's clear the Chiefs' passing attack, not any one player, but the passing attack has to get better. Matt Castle's TD to INT was great. Maybe they need to be looking at improving the weaponry that's out there in their passing attack. Maybe they need to improve the offensive line. Whatever it is, their passing game appears to need to get better, as it's the one unit that's worse than all four of the playoff teams that's out there in this playoffs. Now let's talk about the defensive side of the ball. And I think it's clear for my money, and I know we'll talk about a lot about the draft in the offseason. We always do it. For my money, the best way to go for the Chiefs to improve their chances of being a playoff team is probably going to be on the defensive side of the ball if they can maintain their offense. And I will point out, you don't maintain your offense by just not touching it. You've got to get better. You've got to continue to put good young players in there. Just look back at the Chiefs when they spent all of their draft picks on the defense during the Dick Vermeil era. They had a great offense, and they continually drafted defense, 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 and missed, and were never able to rebuild that defense. In the meantime, the offense eroded. By the time Herm Edwards got here, he inherited a very old offensive team that really fell apart and became very, very poor hasten the entrance of Scott Pioli and Todd Haley as a general manager and head coach, this regime, knowing that they had to come in and rebuild both sides of the football. You've got to continue to address the offense. I am in no way saying just draft defense. The Chiefs have been down that road. We saw what it did. You've got to hit, and there's no guarantee that you'll hit, and then you're also not addressing the offensive side of the football. Defensively, how do the Chiefs stack up? Well, the Chiefs overall, in points allowed, were the 11th best defense in the NFL, giving up 326 points. The average of the four teams still standing, third. 266 points they allowed. 60 points better on average these four teams are in points allowed than the Kansas City Chiefs. Steelers number one in the NFL, Packers number two, Bears number four, and the Jets number six. Four of the top six scoring defenses in the NFL are still standing in the playoffs. Yardage-wise, Chiefs defense graded out to number 14. The average of the four playoff teams is fifth, so clearly a lot of work to be done there as well. The ranked Steelers second, Jets third, Packers fifth, and the Chicago Bears ninth. Four of the top nine teams in yardage still standing. How did they break down as far as the different categories? Passing offense, Chiefs were 17th, improved a lot in the second half of the year, got a lot better in their pass defense in the second half of the year. The average pass defense of the four remaining teams is 11th. One thing that they all pretty much do, with the exception of the Packers, is they really stop the run. Packers suffocate the pass. They do that with a great pass rush. Overall, the passing defenses that are left, Green Bay number 5, the Jets number 6, Pittsburgh Steelers number 12, and the Bears are 20th against the pass, again, for an overall average of 11, the Chiefs sitting at 17. Sacking the quarterback, the Chiefs 39 sacks on the year, had them about 12th in the NFL. How do these teams rank? Well, number 1, number 2, number 8, and number 17. Steelers led the league with 48 sacks. The Packers were 2nd with 47. The Jets were 8th with 40, and the Bears 17th with 34. Chiefs have improved greatly from 2 years ago when they had only 10 sacks as a unit to 39 sacks. Now, on the year, they have improved greatly. They are better than the Chicago Bears when it comes to getting after the quarterback, but they're behind the overall average of these four teams. The average is about 42-plus sacks, so pressuring the quarterback a place where they might be able to get better. But again, that pass defense got a lot better, and they pressured the quarterback very well. Tamba Hali, certainly a big part of that equation. So sacks, maybe could get a little bit better, but they've made great progress in that category here moving forward. Now, against the run, Chiefs were kind of hot and cold. As the pass defense got better, the rush defense seemed to regress. Early in the year, the Chiefs had the 5th-best, 6th-best, 7th-best rush defense. It regressed back to number 14 overall. Average rush defense of the four teams left, number 6. And the one team that doesn't seem to fit is the Packers. I mentioned how good they were against the pass. The number one rush defense in the NFL was the Steelers. Number 2 was the Bears. Number 3 was the Jets. And then the Packers ranking at number 18. So the Chiefs clearly needing to get better against the run if they're going to find themselves in this Final Four, at least based upon the four teams that are there now. Offensively, the Chiefs look like they're there. Maybe they need to get better in the passing attack. Maybe they need to get more aggressive. Again, we'll talk to Jim Trotter about that coming up here in a couple of minutes. But defense looks like the place where the Chiefs can take another big step forward. Remember, Romeo Crennel did a fantastic job this year, raising this unit to number 14 overall in the NFL from 30 to 14. We touched on it before the season began, that if Romeo Crennel is going to come in and do the job you would expect him to do, he would move this team into the upper half, not to the top five, but you could certainly expect him to take this defense into the top half of the NFL. He did exactly that. 16 would be the bottom of the top half. 17 would be the top of the bottom half. He moved this defense up to number 14. Great job this year out of Romeo Crennel, the defensive coordinator. Now the question is, can they take that next step forward? I'm not going to say Romeo Crennel is flawless, but his resume speaks for itself. I would offer up that personnel is where the Chiefs need to upgrade. And as we mentioned last week, I don't know that they've got a glaring need, a definitive this position they have to have. They've done a very good job of solidifying their talent. I think they need to draft over, get some more impact players that can play in front of some of the guys on the defense right now that would become those guys that would get bumped down to second team, would become great depth. Overall, I don't think they're dying for any one position, but they probably need to upgrade across the board. I've said before, I think another cover corner would be a great addition to this team. Look at the way the Jets can put their corners out on an island and really come after the quarterback with the pressure. Steelers like to do that as well. And then another pass rusher. Pretty nice to have James Harrison and Lamar Woodley bookending each other. 4 sacks between the two of them in the game against the Baltimore Ravens. A big reason why the Steelers are able to get back. And even comeback from a 21-7 deficit. Their offense really digging a hole with two big turnovers, giving 7 points on a fumble return for a touchdown and then a short field on a fumble by the running back. The offense digging a hole for the defense, but the defense holding tight, forcing turnovers of their own in the second half, getting an interception, getting a fumble on Ray Rice in their second half, getting the offense back into it. That's what you got to have. Got to have those big plays. The Chiefs did a great job of taking care of the football, but if you look at the takeaway department, their plus-minus number is fantastic because, again, their 14 giveaways were less than any one of these four teams had, but their takeaways are less as well. It's one of the reasons they ended up just +9. Only 23 takeaways for the Kansas City Chiefs. Takeaway numbers for the teams in front of them. Moving up, Jets, 30 takeaways. Packers, 32 takeaways. The Bears and Steelers, 35 takeaways. I don't think it's a coincidence. You pressure the quarterback, you create turnovers. I think the Chiefs probably, if I had one thing that they could do, another pass rusher to go opposite on the other side, whether it's a D-end or an outside linebacker, but to go opposite Tamba Hali would probably be my wish, my late holiday wish from old St. Nick for the Kansas City Chiefs come this offseason. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Jim Trotter from Sports Illustrated joins us next.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Welcome to Chiefs Country, where fans like you wear their passion for their team like war paint. It's for you, Chiefs fans, that we created Chiefs Checking with the official Chiefs debit card and discounts on Chiefs gear all year long.
Visit Metcalf Bank or ChiefsChecking.com and for a limited time, sign up and score a Chiefs game day cooler.
Chiefs Checking, because you're not just a fan on Sunday.
Only at Metcalf Bank. Strong roots, endless possibilities. Member Central Bank Company, member FDIC. See bank for details.
Hey, Chiefs fans, I'm Josh Looney of KCChiefs.com.
And I am the Internet. I usually don't endorse websites, but KCChiefs.com is legit.
I know. At KCChiefs.com, you can check out my daily blog, exclusive video content, see what's going on with the team. You can also interact with other fans in Chiefs 365 and much more.
I'm so excited. I can barely contain myself.
You want the Chiefs? Go to the Chiefs at KCChiefs.com.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on KCChiefs.com.
Welcome back here in the Red Zone here at KCChiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a busy Wednesday as the conference championship games loom ahead. Joining us now, one of the senior writers for Sports Illustrated, Jim Trotter, joins us. Jim, how are you, sir?
Tremendous, thanks.
Let's talk a little bit about your overall impressions of what you thought the Chiefs were going to be before the 2010 season. Guy, you know, something we talk about a lot is setting our expectation level coming in. I'm curious what you thought the Chiefs would be before they ever kicked off this year.
Truthfully, I thought third or fourth in the division. I thought that they were still in the process of their rebuilding project. I thought with it being Charlie's first year, Romeo's first year, and a lot of young players, that it would take a little time to get going, and I thought some of the other teams in the division were more veteran and therefore I thought more seasoned in terms of finishing in second or third place. So to be truthful, I didn't expect a whole lot.
The way it all played out, as you look back on it, what would you say was the biggest reason why they overachieved from what was virtually everybody's expectation? Because I think your expectations were par for the course for just about everybody out there. What was it? What in your mind, as you look back on it, did they do so much better that maybe a lot of us didn't anticipate?
I think there are a lot of layers to this story, and I don't think it was any one thing. I think you have to start with upgrading the talent. I thought they had a phenomenal draft class. I thought getting Eric Berry at the top to try and get a playmaker, which is something they didn't have on the back end of the defense, was big. Getting so many rookies who could come in and contribute right away in the moment wouldn't be bigger than them was big. I thought getting Romeo Crennel to solidify and kind of calm that defense was huge, because Romeo's such, you know, guys will call him a player's coach, and he knows how to relate to players, and he doesn't overwhelm them or overburden them with too much information. So I thought that was key. I also thought this was one of the key factors, was Todd being able to step back, to not have to worry about game planning, and to be able to focus on the whole team. And I thought that there was a point in the season where early on Matt Castle started to struggle. And I think Todd not being so involved with the game planning in terms of the offense, it allowed him to have more of a hands-on approach with Matt in terms of trying to bring him along. And I think you saw that Matt got better each week during that one stretch after about, what, the first four games or so. And I think that Todd hasn't got enough credit for his role in that.
And we're talking with Jim Trotter right now from Sports Illustrated. All right, offensive coordinator moving forward. The Chiefs have some decisions to make there. Certainly your coaching staff is one of the most important decisions you can make as a head coach. Is this the type of thing where there's, you know, only a couple of guys that'll be the right answer, or are there many right answers? It's just a matter of who's available.
No, I think the head coach has to be comfortable, obviously, with whoever it's going to be. And that person has to fit in terms of scheme and personnel, and he has to be on the same page with Todd in terms of what Todd wants to accomplish and what, you know, he wants the offense to look like. That being said, I still believe to some degree that I don't know that Todd is going to find a better play caller than himself. So the question I have in my mind is, in year three of the Haley Pioli regime, has this team come far enough that maybe Todd could go back to calling plays? I don't know at this point. I just know that watching him at Arizona call plays, and even watching him his first year in Kansas City, where obviously the wins weren't there, but you saw them doing some good things offensively late in the year. I think that there, I just think that that's a big question he's going to have to answer. Is there anyone out there who would be a better fit for what he's trying to do than him? And in particular, with the investment he's made, you know, in Matt Castle in terms of trying to develop Matt and working with Matt. So I can't answer that right now. I know, you know, everyone talks about, you know, McCoy, and people talk about, to some extent, McDaniels. The question becomes, is their offensive philosophy in line with what Todd's is? And only Todd can answer that question.
Yeah, it's obviously the first question that the Chiefs have to answer in this offseason is how they're going to tackle that. The reason I asked you is there several right answers, and it's a matter of what's available, because there are different ways they can go. And it's not to say that there's only one right path that they can take. And I'm with you. You know, I think here in Kansas City we forget that Todd Haley had with the Arizona Cardinals in the postseason one of the great runs ever for a play caller. They were a 9-7 football team that people were calling the worst playoff team ever. I know the Seahawks stole that moniker away this year and then, of course, won a game themselves. But, you know, they were coming off like a 34-point beatdown at the hands of the Patriots in a snowy game in New England. They were limping in as the division champs of a bad NFC West, and people gave them no chance. And their defense rose up. Clancy Pendergast deserves some credit. They obviously played their best defense of the year during the course of those four football games. But offensively, too, they were brilliant. I mean, they were not just a juggernaut offense. They were a good offense, but not a juggernaut. And they were not an offense equipped with a great running game. They were kind of a one-dimensional offense, yet they were able to beat playoff teams three in a row and had the Super Bowl, eventual Super Bowl champ, on the ropes with about a minute to go in that football game. There's something to be said for what he accomplished. And I think we forget that sometimes in Kansas City, just how impressive his run was. He did all that, though, without the burden of having to be the head coach as well. You obviously cover the NFL around, you know, cover all the teams, have been around all the guys. We saw Sean Payton win a Super Bowl calling his own plays as the head coach. We may watch Mike McCarthy do exactly the same thing as the Green Bay Packers are red hot right now. When we've seen Mike Shanahan do it, what's the key when you decide that's the approach you're going to take? Is it having a very strong offensive coordinator that puts together a lot of the grunt work, does the film study? I mean, is there a common thread that you've been able to see when a coach does handle his own play calling that makes it all click, that allows him to handle the head coaching duties and the play calling and be successful?
Well, if I were to choose one thing, I would say that you have a very, very strong defensive coordinator, so that you don't have to worry about that side of the ball. When you look at Sean Payton winning the Super Bowl last year, he had Greg Williams. And, in fact, he went out and he gave up part of his salary to bring Greg in because he understood how important it was to have that guy over there. You know, when you look at even like San Diego with North Turner, he had Ron Rivera over there, who this year they had the number one ranked defense in terms of total yards allowed. So So Norv didn't have to worry as much about that. You look at you know, Mike McCarthy in Green Bay. He's got Dom Capers, a very respected 3-4 defensive guy. So Mike doesn't have to worry about that defense. So I think having Romeo Crennel there is huge for Todd, and that now, if he so chooses to call plays, that's one less thing he would have to worry about. And I think he has complete trust in Romeo Crennel. So I wouldn't say it's out of the realm of possibility that Todd would call plays, and I'm not so sure that that's a bad thing either.
No, I think it may be the right choice when they get there. How much do you factor in? I was just thinking through my head, the three names I rattled off, and there are more guys that do it than just, you know, Sean Payton, Mike McCarthy, Mike Shanahan. I know Mike Shanahan doesn't now, but Shanahan with the Broncos. I got to thinking, and I'm like, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, John Elway. Not bad guys under center either. How much is it a product of, you know, we've talked a lot about it. It's not a coincidence. The Steelers have won multiple Super Bowls. They have Ben Roethlisberger. You know, for the most part, any head coach that's won multiple Super Bowls, he did it with the same quarterback. There's only been a couple of them. Joe Gibbs, George Seifert, and kind of a weird takeover for Bill Walsh. We had Montana the last year, and then eventually won it a few years later with Steve Walsh. And then when a backup stepped in, Jeff Hostetler under Bill Parcells. Those are the only three coaches that have ever won multiple Super Bowls with different quarterbacks. But the quarterbacks have kind of been able to handle it with different coaches. Aikman did it with a couple of different coaches. How much of that equation of the success has been that they had that great situation of having a great guy under center as well?
Well, it's a quarterback's league. So, I mean, first and foremost, if you're going to win in the NFL, I believe you have to have, particularly in this day and age, with the way the rules are, et cetera, you've got to have a really strong trigger man. And the better your quarterback, I think the better your chances of winning a Super Bowl. You know, I think you look at this year in the playoffs right now in the conference semis, you know, we would say potentially the only really weak quarterback, if you wanted to call him that, would be Sanchez. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Mark has really played well in the playoffs in terms of managing games, making plays when he has to. And you know, he's got a very, very strong defense, and they can run the ball. So, you know, I think that what you're saying is true. If you've got an elite quarterback, obviously you've got a much better chance of winning not only one but multiple Super Bowls. And I got to say, I was impressed with the way that Matt Castle came on this past season, because early in the year it looked like it was going to be more of the same. I think he had four interceptions in the first three games, and you start to say, okay, is this guy ever going to live up to the contract that he was given? And, in fact, he told me that part of his problem was that he was trying to live up to it. He was trying to live up to people's expectations. And finally, you know, what he told me is he shut everything off. He shut the TV off. He stopped reading the newspapers. Anytime he saw anything that said Chiefs on it, he turned away from it, and he just focused on his game and what he needed to do, and it helped him. So I think the Chiefs can win with Matt Castle. I think now they got a taste of the playoffs, and there's so much for the maturation process. And going through what they went through, and even losing the way they did to Baltimore, I think this is a young group that can grow from that. So clearly they've got a few areas they've got to address, but I think that they're on the right track.
You mentioned, you used the term, it's a quarterback's league, and I certainly agree. And we spent a lot of time talking about the quarterback position. Matt Castle had a phenomenal year, 27 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. A lot of people say, hey, the Raider game, they even want to factor that one out because the Chiefs already had the AFC West in hand, and say, hey, he was 27-5, whatever you want. And I think TDs and interceptions are the best way to evaluate a quarterback. The question then becomes, how much better can Matt Castle get? Everybody has a career year. Everybody has the year that, statistically speaking, is the best one they ever had. In your mind, what are the odds that the best year he's going to have was this 2010 season?
I don't think so at all. I think if they can get him some help on the perimeter, if they can find a complement for Dwayne Bowe and continue to upgrade that offensive line, I think Matt can be even better. So I don't think we've seen the best of him. I think as he gets more comfortable in the system, and that's why I say it's very critical, this hire or decision that Todd makes, because you don't want to keep changing on him. You know, they go from Todd the first year to Charlie, and now we don't know who they're going to. So continuity is very important. And, you know, as Matt said, in the offseason, he had a full offseason to work with Charlie, with the receivers, with everyone to get on the same page. He didn't have that the first year there. So So I think that can be as good, if not better, if Scott Pioli continues to upgrade the talent around him.
Can a team be too run-oriented? The Chiefs, and we're talking to Jim Trotter from Sports Illustrated, the Chiefs were the number one rushing team in the NFL, the four teams, and you know it's cherry-picking. It's a small sample, but it is the four teams that are still standing, so I think they're a pretty good group to study. Their rank in rushing, you know, the Chiefs were number one. Their average rank is 15th. In the NFL and running the ball. Now, the Jets were very good. They were fourth. The Steelers were 11th. The Bears were 22nd, and the Packers were 24th. Can you be so that's only one top 10 rushing team is still there. One, two, and three aren't there. Do you look at the strength that the Chiefs had and say, they did that. That it's a strength. Certainly you want to run the ball, but when you're that dominated, number one rushing offense, number 30 passing offense, you clearly have some problems that have to be addressed. I know you touched on the talent where it could be helped out by having another weapon there for Matt Castle, but are they just too dependent on the run to be a team that can win three or four games against playoff defenses?
I don't think they're too dependent on the run. I think they don't have enough complementary players in the passing game to make it work. The Ravens knew, you take away, and everyone knew, you take away Dwayne Bowe, and it becomes that much harder for the Kansas City offense to function. So that's why I say if they can get another playmaker on the outside or two, one in the slot as well, then I think that offense becomes that much more dangerous. And I don't, you've got, in my opinion, playing in the cold where they do and how you have going to have to go to the cold in all likelihood in the playoffs and whatnot. I think you have to be able to run the ball. You have to be able to have a four-minute offense where if you're trying to milk a lead, you can put it in a back's hand and they can get after it and run that clock out. So, no, I'm never going to say you can be too dependent on the run, but I think you have to have a complementary passing game, and I think that's where the Chiefs got in trouble late in the year, is that everyone knew. Take away Dwayne Bowe, and you pretty much have a good chance of stopping that offense, particularly if you can put them in come-from-behind situations. The Chiefs aren't built for that. And so I think the more weapons they get in the passing game, the more balanced they become and the better they become.
That is Jim Trotter from Sports Illustrated, senior writer, senior NFL writer for SI. We will talk some more about what it takes to be a playoff team. We'll get a little bit into the turnovers, discuss the subject of whether or not you can be too dependent on taking care of the football. Does that make you too one-dimensional? Does it make you too conservative? We'll delve into that, as well as the expectations for 2011 that Jim has for the Kansas City Chiefs. That's coming up next here in the Red Zone.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Every Sunday, a city of more than 2 million unites. A community of fans thousands strong anticipates. A team of 53 players charges the field.
It's a sweep left of the fullback, and a great block springs over the outside. He's up the left sideline.
And one grocery store is proud to support them all.
20. He's going to outrace everyone to the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. A Kansas City Chiefs fan, they'll tailgate just about anywhere. And they live to hear the three most important words ever.
Tailgate Kansas City!
With Hy-Vee's weekly tailgate specials, you'll find everything you need for your next Chiefs tailgate or Chiefs party. Stop into Hy-Vee and stock up with new tailgate specials every week.
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on KCChiefs.com.
All right, welcome back. You are listening to the Red Zone here at KCChiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday as we're talking to one of the fine football writers, one of the best football writers in America today, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Jim Trotter is with us. And Jim, again, thank you very much for your time. Let's touch on something else. We talked about the running dimension, being focused on running the football and being a great rushing team. Let's talk about being focused on not turning the ball over. There are certainly great statistics about how winning the turnover battle wins games. We even heard Todd Haley quote some of those statistics. This year, And the Chiefs are very good at it, only turning the football over 14 times total. It's one of the five best seasons in the history of the NFL. The other teams, this year's Patriots, the 2010 Pats, set a new all-time record for fewest turnovers in the history of the league. At 13, there are two teams tied. The 08 Dolphins, and I'm drawing a blank, we'll look it up again. There was another 08 team, an NFC team, that was there at that same 13 turnovers. And then with 14 turnovers, tied with the Chiefs for the fourth best ever, again, one of the five best, was the 1990 New York Giants. Now, the Giants went on to win the Super Bowl. The Chiefs lost their first-round game. The 08 Dolphins lost their first-round game, by the way, to the Baltimore Ravens. They had five turnovers to the Ravens. Sounds very similar, because it is, to what the Chiefs did here in 2010. The 08 team, again, we'll look that up while we're talking here, but they also lost their first-round game, and now the 2010 Patriots have lost their first playoff game. And I'm curious, because they all got bounced in that first try, except for the Giants. And you know, Marty Schottenheimer teams were great. They were constantly very high in the plus-minus category, did a great job of not turning the football over, yet were never able to really have that playoff success other than 93 when they went to the AFC Championship game. Is it possible to become too focused on the turnovers? In other words, when you decide that, okay, what we're going to do is never give the football away, does that force your hand and make you too conservative on the offensive side of the ball to the point where, yes, it's a good formula for winning regular season games, but when you get in against playoff caliber teams, you've got to take some chances. You've got to make some big plays. Everybody wants playmakers, but sometimes you've got to make the big play in your approach, your scheme, in the things you do, that you become actually a team that just gets too conservative when your focus is so much on not turning the ball over that you become so conservative you can't beat playoff caliber teams.
No, I wouldn't agree with that. I think ball security is number one when you start talking about the playoffs in particular. You know, if you look at the Patriots this year, the playoffs come down to matchups. And the problem for the Patriots on Sunday wasn't that they were too conservative or too focused on ball security. It was that they got beaten by a better team on that day that I think was just a little bit better prepared and a little bit hungrier. So from that standpoint, I don't think at all that you ever think that your focus is too much on ball security. I think it has to be on that, because the statistics show as well, when you're on the negative side of that, more times than not, and large percentage of the time, you're going to lose. So, no, I think it comes back to balance. I think it comes back to matchups and all those things once you get in the playoffs. But I think one thing you better be able to do when you get to the postseason in particular is that you better be able to take care of the ball.
Is it because you look at it, turnovers happen in the postseason. Is it a sign? I'm just, again, and we love grinding the numbers here in the red zone. Is it a sign that this team and those teams needed to be better? And maybe it is the Patriots are an isolated case. And maybe it is that we're talking about five different teams. You pull five random
Absolutely.
Teams from anything and say, hey, how come these five teams didn't win the Super Bowl? What I thought was amazing was, and while I'm talking to you, I'm looking for what that fifth team is. I'm kicking myself for not being able to remember it. But what I thought was amazing was they all, and now that the Patriots are added to that mix, they all lost in the first round except for that 90 Giants team. We saw the Steelers have to overcome turnovers. The Ravens were asked to overcome turnovers and came close to getting it done, but they were going to have to overcome the turnovers to win the game. Is it just a sign that maybe I'm going at it backwards, that maybe the strong teams, they are so strong that even with the turnovers, they have the talent, the quarterback, the different positions, that they just overcome that, and it is just a little bit of that statistical anomaly, as I mentioned?
I think it's an anomaly. I think if you look at, the Patriots game, since it's the most recent,
right?
Tom Brady had gone, 300 and some odd passes without an interception, and we get to the playoff game, and he throws a pick that's costly for them late in that first half, I believe. So, I think coaches always preach, and rightfully so, ball security, particularly in the postseason, and I think that's critical. Again, I just think postseason comes down to matchups and who makes the fewer mistakes on that day. So I don't think you'll find any coach, and I will never accept that you're better off if your ball security isn't as strong,
right,
so to speak. I think you can be aggressive and still have ball security. I just think you pick your spots. You know, coaches will tell you, you're going to get two or three plays a game, and maybe not even that many in the playoffs, where you're going to get a shot downfield. And you try and set that up all day or all game. And when you get it, you need to take advantage of it. And some teams do and some don't. Some turn the ball over in that situation. But I think you can be aggressive and still have ball security. And I think that the good teams or the teams that go on to win championships usually do that.
And I'm reminded of, you know, listening to Dick Vermeil. And Dick Vermeil told the story. He said, look, he said, I used to play that way where, you know, he talked about the 13-10 game, 17-16. He said, you play those games and that's great. You don't want to make any mistakes. And this is one of the reasons why it's always stood out, you know, because it's a guy who's been to two Super Bowls and won another one and won a division championship with another franchise. And he said, you know, I finally realized, look, you can't play that way. You've got to be aggressive. And he said that's when he opened up the offense in Philadelphia, and that's when they took the next step. And obviously we know how aggressive they were and unafraid. Kurt Warner threw 20-plus interceptions their second trip. I know Vermeil wasn't there, but that mindset was there. He said, look, you got to be willing to go down the field. You've just got to build a mindset where you're going to be strong enough to overcome a mistake, because the rewards, the big plays, will more than pay for the interceptions here or there, or the you know, fumbles. Nobody wants to fumble. That goes without saying. That's about ball security and not taking care of it. But as far as the interceptions go and being aggressive in that passing attack, he said, look, you just can't. You just play yourself. You keep your opponents around, and then when you do have that one mistake, it crushes you. Because you're not able to be aggressive enough. That was his theory.
I understand what he's saying, but also look at the personnel he had when he was doing that.
Yeah.
I think if you see the Chiefs with better weapons in the passing game, I think you will see them opening up the offense more. But I think to this point, you have to play to your strength. And the strength of the Kansas City Chiefs in 2010 was their running game. You know, the only real threat they had on the perimeter was one guy, Dwayne Bowe. You know, Tony Moyaki came in as a rookie and he played well. He's a tight end. So I think, you know, you look at some of those teams Dick had, even when he was in Kansas City or whether he was in St. Louis or even if you go back to Philadelphia, they had more threats on the perimeter. And again, I think once Kansas City adds a few more pieces to that puzzle, then I think you'll see them be more aggressive. Because Todd Haley's nature, when you see him calling plays, is not 3 yards in a cloud of dust.
Right.
I mean, he likes to open the offense up, but again, you've got to have the personnel to do that.
And you know, being creative offensively doesn't necessarily mean dropping back and throwing the ball. There's creativity in the running game as well, and I think we've clearly seen that in Kansas City, that it's not just a turnaround, hand it to them, and plunge it into the middle of the line. They are very creative in how they run the football, and that's
sure.
part of the equation as well. And we have found it, by the way. It was the 08 Giants also had 13, and they lost. You know, they were coming off. They were defending Super Bowl champs, but they only turned it over 13 times. That after 07, becoming the first Super Bowl team to win a Super Bowl with a quarterback that threw 20 interceptions in the championship year. You said it, Jim, that it's a quarterback league. It's not necessarily an offense league, though. There's no doubt that the quarterback play, and Jay Cutler's hot and cold, but when he's hot, we know he's got the $150 million arm. When he's hot, he's as good as anybody out there. But their offensive ranks, Packers 9, Jets 11, Steelers 14, and the Bears 30th in offense. Defensively, however, Steelers are number 2, Jets are number 3, Packers are number 5, and the Bears are number 9. And if you that's how the NFL ranks them by yards. If you rank them by points, they get even better. Steelers right. number 1, Packers number 2, Bears number 4, Jets number 6. We were talking about that in our last segment. You know, we did have a pocket in the last decade, and I think even in the 90s, where some high-scoring teams were actually winning the Super Bowl. The Saints did it as a high-scoring team, although I think their defense was better than the numbers showed last year. They proved it because they took a huge jump forward this year, statistically speaking. Are we, though, back at a point where the defenses have caught up, and if you want to win, you better be able to play lights-out defense?
Well, I think you better be able to play good defense or very good defense. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think, as you said, the key statistic to me isn't total yards. It's points allowed. And each of these defenses is very good in that area, no question about it. So, you know, the thing that's going to be interesting to me this weekend is that in both matchups, the teams know each other. You know, they've already played this year. They know each other well. And I look at the Bears and the Packers in particular, and the two hottest quarterbacks in the playoffs right now are Cutler and Aaron Rodgers. And yet, if you look at their matchups against the opposing defense that they're going to see on Sunday in the last 2 years, Aaron Rodgers, I think, has thrown 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and Jay Cutler has thrown 4 touchdowns, 9 interceptions.
Right.
You know, so that tells me that these teams know each other well, the defenses know these quarterbacks well, and as you and I were talking about a little bit earlier, in my opinion, it's going to come down to who can protect the football, who takes care of the football, who capitalizes on those 1 or 2 opportunities that you're going to get in a game to make that big play. So, yeah, I think that defense is important, but again, you know, you go back to a couple of years ago, that Cardinal team, that was not a good defense. I would venture to say it was a bad defense, without disrespecting it. But, you know, it manned up for that playoff run there and found a rhythm for those 3 games or whatever it was and played well. But I think you have to have strong defense to win a championship. I don't think you're going to see too many teams win a Super Bowl 47-45, so to speak. I think your defense better come to play if you want to get there and if you want to win it.
Last question before I give you our final four, and that is what kind of expectations do you have? Now we've got obviously a lot of offseason, who the offensive coordinator is going to be, who's going to handle the play calling, the draft, free agency, the CBA is looming out there as well. A lot of questions that have to be answered. But right now, what kind of expectation do you have for the Chiefs this very, very, very early stage and looking ahead to 11? What kind of expectations do you have for them next year?
I have high expectations. I think they were a young team this year that I think got a taste of what it's like to be in a championship hunt, you know, in terms of the Super Bowl. So from my standpoint, I thought it was critical in their draft that they went out and they got guys who were leaders, who were captains of their teams, guys who were football junkies, if you will. So I don't think the success that the Chiefs, had this year is going to somehow sort of make these guys drunk, you know, and feel that they've arrived and that they're better than they are. I think these are guys who love football, who are going to continue to work hard, and I see the arrow going up. So from my standpoint, if they can add a few more pieces to this puzzle, and if they do as well in the draft this year as they did a year ago, then I think this team's going to be set up for a while to be very successful. So I think that Todd Haley has stamped his sort of personality on this club. I think that Romeo Crennel in the second year as defensive coordinator, these guys are going to be able to play faster than they did this year because everything will be sort of second nature to them. I see no reason why the Chiefs can't be in the hunt again next year.
Jim Trotter is with us from Sports Illustrated, senior writer for SI. Jim, final four quickies. I'll start you with this one. Who do you think will be the number one pick in the 2011 draft now that Andrew Luck has taken his name out?
I'm going to say Nick Fairley from Auburn. Okay. I think that, you know, it was a big weakness for the Carolina Panthers this year was the interior of their defensive line. I think Fairley showed all season as well as in that championship game that he was the most dominant defensive lineman in college football this year. And the fact that Ndamukong Suh played so well for the Lions this year, I think will make it easier for Carolina to say, you know, we're going to invest the number one pick overall in a defensive tackle.
All right. How often do you and, of course, former Kansas City star writer Joe Posnanski hang out at the water cooler?
Never. The thing about SI is that we all live in different parts of the country. So, to be truthful with you, the only time that I have seen Joe in the last couple of years was at the Super Bowl. So we're not in the same places together.
Yeah, it's a totally different world with the internet and email, especially in the written world. I just like the idea of thinking of all you guys, all the different guys that you have. Such a great staff there at Sports Illustrated. All just sitting around, kicking around ideas at the water
cooler. I would love to. Trust me.
It'd be great.
Pick Joe's brain. The guy's so good at what he does that, without a doubt, he's a resource.
All right, who's your Super Bowl pick? Who over who right now do you think it's going to be when we're all said and done?
Oh, you know, I mean, I can make myself look silly. I'll say to you what I said. I might as well say what I said going into the season. When we made our preseason predictions,
okay.
I had the Jets and the Packers in the Super Bowl, and I had the Jets winning it.
Okay, yeah, stick with it till you're down.
Sure.
I was sticking with Ravens over Packers until this week. I'll be coming up with something else. So Jets over – you said Jets over Packers?
Correct.
Okay. All right. I like that. That's a solid one right now. And finally, and I think this is most important for our listeners, have you ever been asked to cover the Sports Illustrated swimsuit shoot?
No, I haven't, okay. Unfortunately. Okay.
Have you ever volunteered for it?
I think everybody in the building has volunteered for
it. Good to know. Hey, Jim, thanks so much. Great stuff. We really enjoyed the conversation. Thanks so much for your time, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you again soon.
Okay, I appreciate it.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Hey, Chiefs fans, I'm Josh Looney of KCChiefs.com.
And I am the Internet. Great to be here, Josh.
We're here to tell you about all the new and exciting things going on at KCChiefs.com.
I usually don't endorse websites, but KCChiefs.com is legit.
I know. At KCChiefs.com, you can check out my daily blog, exclusive video content, see what's going on with the team, learn about the Chiefs cheerleaders, and much more.
Yeah, buddy.
That's not all. You can also interact with other fans in Chiefs 365. Chiefs 365 is the place for Chiefs fans to interact, give feedback, and be connected with everything Chiefs.
Fan feedback? That is awesome. But Josh, I really want to buy a jersey.
At KCChiefs.com, you can do that too. The Chiefs Pro Shop is the best place on the web. Buy all of your favorite Chiefs gear, gifts, and much more.
Whoa, system overload.
You want the Chiefs? Go to the Chiefs at KCChiefs.com.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on KCChiefs.com.
All right, welcome back here in the Red Zone here at KCChiefs.com. Time for some emails. You can email us, redzone at KCChiefs.org. That is redzone at KCChiefs.org. Our great friend Daryl, one of our great emailers, on the trail again. He says, I'm starting to lean towards Tyler Palco as Matt Castle's backup. Do you see Brody Croyle wearing a Chiefs uniform in 2011, or where do you see our quarterback situation headed in 11? Daryl, always great to hear from you. I will say, number one, how about the fact we're not talking about the starting quarterback? Let's point that out first and foremost. You mentioned the quarterback situation in 2011. The good news is 27 TDs, 7 interceptions, over 3,000 yards passing. Matt Castle has firmly grabbed a hold of that starting quarterback spot. And as we heard from Jim Trotter, if you can put another weapon, another wideout opposite Dwayne Bowe, how much better does he get? How much better does that pass offense get, which we talked about is probably the one place the Chiefs significantly need to upgrade to be a real Super Bowl contender on the offensive side of the ball? How much better do they get? Matt Castle clearly can make plays, 27 touchdowns, I think is the third best total in franchise history. Probably a number that you'd like to see get to 30 eventually, although not necessarily a must. As only one of the four quarterbacks that are playing had more than 30 touchdowns, and that was Aaron Rodgers coming through with 31 touchdowns. So it's not a must. 27, pretty good. Touchdown passes by the teams. 31 for the Packers, 23 for the Bears, 22 for the Steelers, and 20 for the Jets. They did not make all their plays, all their points in the passing game. A lot of it field goals, to be honest with you, getting themselves into position for field goals. But what a great situation that we're not asking a question about the starting quarterback. Matt Castle has answered that. Now the question is, can you continue to upgrade the offensive line? Can you continue to upgrade the weaponry around him? Talk about the guys behind him. I do think Brody Croyle will be on this team. I think he's definitively number two. I think Tyler Palco will go into camp as well. There's obviously an attraction to Tyler Palco. They like the skill set that he has, that he will bring to the equation. And I think the Chiefs will look to add a quarterback in this draft. I've said that for many years, and I think they've tried for many years through previous regimes to get a quarterback on their own that they can develop. And I think they'll try to do that again. Whether or not they're successful, I don't know. The history of Scott Pioli in New England is, you know, you hear about, obviously, Tom Brady and Matt Castle, sixth and seventh round picks, respectively. But there are numerous other picks from Rohan Davey to Cliff Kingsbury by the Patriots organization, where they were taking a shot at some later round quarterback prospects. I think you'll see the Chiefs look for that as well, a guy that perhaps they can groom for the future to come in and compete with Tyler Palco. There are many guys, like I said, neither one of those guys ultimately, they're both on the roster. At least Davey was on the roster for a couple of years. Not to say that they'll have a guy and he'll definitively be the third. Who knows? You know, to me, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, the quarterback position. You get a shot, you see a guy, you think he's Aaron Rodgers there when he gets to the board, and he's still sitting there. You know, the Green Bay Packers had Brett Favre and had a veteran quarterback, an iconic Hall of Fame quarterback, And they didn't hesitate. They went ahead and took Aaron Rodgers, even at the risk and really the cost of Brett Favre's career in Green Bay. I don't know that he ever really got beyond that. He was frustrated. He admitted it as much. They didn't add a weapon to the team to try to win now that they were looking to the future. They may be going to the Super Bowl and winning the Super Bowl this year because of that bold decision. I think the Chiefs will look and evaluate quarterbacks in every single round. I don't think they'll take one early on, but you never know. If they got a guy they like, maybe they will. But in the later rounds, I think it's quite possible they'll draft a quarterback to come in and compete with the three that they've got. Who loses out? I don't know. We'll see if they're able to get that fourth quarterback. But I think they would like to find a young quarterback that they can come in and develop and work on grooming for the future. I don't think you'll see a quarterback in free agency coming in to compete on this roster. Daryl, always good to hear from you. Let's go to Edward's email. Again, redzone@kcchiefs.org. Who will be the Chiefs' offensive coordinator next year? Cutting to the chase, something we talked about with Jim Trotter, how it will how it will play out in the long run. I hope Haley does not take this on and hire someone he is compatible with. I think, Edward, you got a great point. He's got to be compatible with. And I'll add something else that we didn't really get to with Jim is Matt Cassel needs to be compatible with that guy as well. I think there will definitely be an offensive coordinator hired. I think after that, the question will be who will call the plays. And I think there's a pretty good chance it's going to be Todd Haley calling the plays again. No inside information whatsoever, just trying to read between the lines from the comments that Todd Haley has made. And I'll agree with Jim. I don't think that's a bad thing. He's been one of the great play callers in the last few years, went on a great run with the Arizona Cardinals. The question is, does he have, you know, Kurt Warner, Hall of Fame quarterback, makes it a lot easier. Matt Cassel certainly developing into a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback. Can he handle the duties during the week that the offensive coordinator needs? I think that's why it's going to be important for him to work hand-in-hand with his offensive coordinator, because I think he'll have to do a lot of the duties during the week if indeed Todd Haley is going to call plays on Sunday. It's going to need to be a guy that he works with well that can help build the game plan with him while he handles the head coaching duties. And then he pulls the trigger on Sunday. Again, Mike McCarthy calls the plays for the Green Bay Packers. And, of course, last year's Super Bowl champion, the New Orleans Saints, Sean Payton, calls plays for that team. It's been very successful for those two. And one of the things Jim pointed out is you got to have a strong defensive coordinator that you don't have to worry about that side of the ball. And I think the Chiefs clearly have that in Romeo Crennel. So I think it's a distinct possibility and option for Todd Haley as we move forward. Who will it be? You've probably seen all the same names thrown around that I have. Everything from Josh McDaniels to the Denver Broncos to numerous names. Whoever it will be, I think it'll be a guy that they make sure does have that cohesion. He better have the cohesion with Todd Haley. I think that's going to be the important part. And then who calls the plays? The next question after that. Again, you can email us redzone@kcchiefs.org. That's redzone@kcchiefs.org. That's going to do it for us this week in the Red Zone. I want to thank Brad Young, Brad Kubander. I want to thank Curtis Siebelt, as well as Adam Pellegrino for helping us put together the Red Zone today. This is Seren Petro saying thank you very much for joining us here in the Red Zone.
You've been listening to the Red Zone with Seren Petro. Join us again next week for more discussion of your Kansas City Chiefs. This has been an exclusive presentation of KCChiefs.com.